Yeah, it's exactly where we are. It's great to have your company. Don't forget, after 8:30, Blue Eyes will be getting ready for Racing Pulse. Day 3 action at the Bull, which should be fantastic fun down there if you're getting involved. Good luck to you. Do it nicely on a beautiful day in Melbourne Town. Anyway, hopefully it is again at the Bull. Brad Johnson joins us on a Thursday morning. He's our Thursday morning specialist on The Breakfast Club. It's great to have him part of our team in 2021. He's back again. Johnny, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. How are you guys?
We're going well, thank you. Have you been to the Bull? Have you ever done a Bull carnival?
No, I've never been to the Bull. So my father-in-law has a couple of times. But no, obviously know a little bit about it, Half, but never actually ventured down there to watch the racing.
You're halfway there, John. It's a day trip.
I know, that's the thing. I'm only a couple of hours away, so I just don't have the time, Half. You know, I'm really busy these days.
That's true. You are saving the world one chest garment at a time at the moment.
That's it. One Xena vest at a time, mate.
What have you seen so far, John? We're a third of the way through the season. What have you seen? What's caught your eye in the world of AFL footy?
Oh, there's well, plenty, to be honest. It really is the fluctuations in, you know, performance. But in a positive nature, I'm talking, Half. Any game we go into now, it can turn, you know, within quarters, within halves. And I think that's the good nature about where things are at. You know, I suppose the Gold Coast Suns are a prime example last week, getting to the MCG, taking on the Pies and doing what they did in a game that I didn't expect them to win. I thought Collingwood would just have the talent to get them across the line, and it's taking a bit more than that, we understand. And Gold Coast for me was a huge win. North Melbourne, what they did with Melbourne last week for a half, and then basically in that third quarter they made some their own individual errors, North Melbourne.
Horrible.
which gave Melbourne two easy goals and got them back and the momentum swinging their way. Like Jack Zeeble, just if he had taken that mark, Fritz wouldn't have kicked that goal, and little things like that. So you see that North Melbourne have just had a bit of a shift in their performance the last couple of weeks, hanging in there longer, going to make it difficult for teams, you know, in certain patches of the game. So I like that. You know, we know where the good teams are at. We know what teams are going to battle it out this year. But from that depth point of view, I think that's important for the season now in those teams continuing to improve week in, week out, so that games don't become blowouts.
Jono, the Bulldogs play Carlton this Sunday. I'm interested in your thoughts on the Bulldogs last Friday night. I know it's a while ago now, but just in what they would have learnt out of that themselves. My gut feeling watching the Dogs was that they played home and away football, and in the second half, Richmond played finals football. I might be being a bit harsh, but I'm interested in what they would have learnt out of what happened in the first half versus what happened in the second half.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good assessment, Whitey, in terms of the way that they did go about things. But when you look at even the first half, Tom Lynch kicks 4 points, I think it was, maybe even five behind. So Richmond probably should have been in front at halftime. So I think it's more the total game from the Bulldogs. Yes, they got some freedom. Yes, they got the ball out wide. They did have some pretty strong entries going inside forward 50. But overall, I think Richmond pretty much controlled the majority of the game, especially with their ball movement going forward and putting the Dogs' defence under consistent pressure. They just couldn't score. They just couldn't, you know, convert. So in the second half, they converted. They converted in a big way. Their ability to... I think the Dogs lost their shape, which is the one thing that they will look at closely, Whitey. And I'm talking when Richmond just had the ball in their forward half of the ground, time in forward half, and the Dogs just were bombing it out rather than trying to run it out. Their forwards got way too high. So when they did have to kick it under pressure out of defence, it was just coming straight back in, because we know how well Richmond's defence set up behind the ball, especially with Hooley and Grimes and the way that they lead the Tigers in that fashion. So I think that's what the Bulldogs will learn, the fact that they just, if the game isn't going their way, they've got it back in their mids and defenders. The forwards can't get pushed too high. They need to reset so that they can actually compete when the ball does come out of defensive 50 for them.
No coach wants to lose, but from a Luke Beveridge perspective, considering how many wins they've already banked, was it necessarily a bad thing because it gives him a lot to work with? And even particularly from a defensive point of view of maybe how the taller Richmond players got a hold of the Dogs' defence, it just seemed that there's a lot to learn from that Luke Beveridge might not necessarily be disappointed about to have that happen to them now.
Oh, no, the full assessment would have been perfect for Bevo coming off that. Look, you don't wash over anything when you have a win. You sometimes even try and drill down a little bit more. We've experienced that before where you're on a really good run and things are going really well, but it's not until you lose that you can really identify some other things that think, well, hang on a second, we're not going as well as what I am as an individual or what we are as a team, especially in that review process. So the loss can certainly do that. I think the assistant coaches might have spent a few more hours coding this one rather than getting just through the win and enjoying that side of things. So without question, this just allows them to restructure, straighten things up a little bit after a loss, and now have got plenty to work on leading into the next few weeks.
Half, just a text coming in, it's probably for both of you, around the Bulldogs' key defenders. Is that a concern? We know how good their midfield is, and their forward line's pretty good as well. Is that a concern, or is it too early to tell?
I think their key defenders are fine. I mean, matchups got them last week. Look, I think Tom Lynch and Jack Rewald are two of the hardest key forwards in the competition to defend, and you need really good defenders. All you need, Jono, you need really good source pressure to make sure that any ball coming in is ugly and yuck, and they've got to work their backsides off to get possession. I don't have any issues, and I think what your point before, Whitey, is probably the most relevant one for the Bulldogs going forward. They learn enormous amounts about what happens against Richmond and what happens in big games on the back of what happened Friday night. I think they actually benefit from the loss. You know, too often benefit from the loss. But I think the Bulldogs will be capable of benefiting from the loss and being a better team on the back of what happened last Friday night. So their key defenders, one-on-one, it's not Glenn Jakovic and Steve Silvani floating back there, but... You know, they do their job, and if they've got the right pressure further up the field, then, which is what their whole game is based upon, then they'll be fine. But easy ball coming into any forward 50 or any forward half of the ground, Jono, is tough to defend, doesn't matter who you are.
No, that's right. I think Alex Keith has had a very good year, actually. I think he's continually improving as a player, and he holds them up. It's probably that with Gardner not in the side, I think Zane Cordy is the one that they want to really try and find some form again. He didn't play that well last weekend, and Premiership player, so I think he's the one that they may look towards that needs to find some serious form over the next couple of weeks to try and assist in the air in particular, because he does read the play really well, Zane Cordy. So if he can recapture some of that type of form that we have seen in the past, then that'll definitely assist someone like Alex Keith, who's trying to hold down the defensive post at fullback.
That third quarter, though, was quite extraordinary. 23 minutes of no possessions in your forward half.
Yeah.
Like, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable footy. The fact that they could not get it out because Richmond had set up so well. But you're right, John. I couldn't agree more with what you said before, that they just lost all their shape, pressed way too high and had nowhere to go. So there's actually no point winning the footy because you can't do anything with it. There was no element of control.
They're always going to be good enough to win the ball back in the back half.
Yeah,
they've
that's
proved
right.
that over time, the Bulldogs. It's just that
them in.
You can't do that to Richmond. You can't do that to any team, in particular Richmond, who are the very best at it, and we've seen that over the last few years. You just cannot leave their defenders to sit back by themselves, because you'll have Bolter doing what he does, and he'll just bomb it back in high anyway. Grimes will just control things and set them up. Hooley's got class and will step and hit short, or long. So you just can't. You've got to man those guys up, and you've just got to back in that you will win that ball back in that point. Or, you know what, Half, it's not too bad. If you have one kicked against you, it resets structure.
That's right.
So it's actually not too bad in that situation to have one kicked against you. So you can actually then reset, compose yourselves, and then get your structure back in the way that you want to play your footy, and go back to that centre bounce and, you know, try and get it going your way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Trust your mids and your defenders to win the footy back and just have a presence forward of the footy and you'll be fine.
Yep.
Get it back into control rather than chaos. Richmond want the ball in chaos. That's what they feed off. They love the chaos ball because their pressure's so pronounced. But they'll learn a lot, the Doggies. I reckon Richmond are the winners, but I think the Bulldogs win out of that too.
Yeah, and look, as I said, I know that it happened last Friday night, but I think, I hate to use the word, but there are key learnings to come out of that game for both teams. And, you know, as a couple of text messages that have come through here, I mean, Richmond didn't have a lot of their key players, you know, Vlosten, Martin, Prestia, Lambert, etc. The Dogs didn't have Dunkley either, and I think that's important to recognise as well. I just think that...
It's not quite Vlosten, Martin.
No, Prestia. No, it's not. No,
what,
it's not.
What about that, though? Lambert as well. Lambert's an absolute star in the competition. Here we are, actually. That's a great text, because ultimately... They would have beaten the Dogs by 100.
No, but this is my point, Jono, about the Dogs, is that if they can't beat Richmond now, how are they going to beat them later in the year? Now, yes, you get learnings out of it, but I'm just interested in what they're thinking, what the coaches particularly are thinking. Hey, geez, you know, we got them at such a good time and we couldn't do it. especially after, you know, getting a good start, at least on the scoreboard. And Richmond got all these players to come back. Or whether they go, we're in front at halftime. We know how to beat them. We'll be okay. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's huge, especially with those players that weren't playing in the lineup for the Tigers. So it would add an element of doubt going into the next game if those players are there. We couldn't do it last time, but now they're even stronger again. So it's that's the challenge. We've said it from the start for the Dogs. Can they be a top four team? They haven't been able to achieve that at all under the guidance of Bebo. They've won the flag, but they've never been top four team. So to do that, they've got to start competing better against, you know, the very best out there.
No, it's a fair point. Just a release come through from Warrnambool, just off topic a little bit, but an important one. The Warrnambool Racing Club has been advised of a COVID-19 community case in New South Wales, which we heard of yesterday, and a subsequent list of public exposure sites published by New South Wales Health. Any person who has attended a COVID exposure site or reasonably suspects that a close contact has done so is not permitted to attend the Warrnambool race meeting today. The Victorian Department of Health has declared these New South Wales sites as Tier 1 COVID exposure sites. Any person who's been to a Tier 1 exposure site during the times listed must get tested immediately, isolate, and contact the Victorian Department of Health at 1300 651 160. 1300 651 160. The internet can help you with those Tier 1 sites and those exposures in New South Wales, which you may or may not have come across. So if you have, you can't go to the Bull, and you need to get tested and isolate and contact the Department of Health. A bit of a release from the Warrnambool Racing Club today. David's in Karen, wants to talk about the Bulldogs with you, Western Bulldogs champion Brad Johnson. Hello, David.
Good morning, Half. Listen, Whitey was talking about the Richmond players out injured, which I understand and agree with. Terrific players. But everyone seems to be forgetting the Bulldogs had 8 players out sitting in the grandstand. 8. 5 of them are absolute certainties. They're absolutely very important for the club. 2 of them hopefully will come back this week. English and Van der Meer is still, and they've still got players like Williams, Dunkley. Williams is last year rated the top 5 backmen in the competition. Dunkley,
yep.
There's a number of who are still, you know. So the Dogs, in fact, structurally, the Dogs had some very important players out. In fact, the most important player I think they had out was English, because the structure of the forward line and the whole ruck division fell apart. At one stage, they had Bontempelli, Bruce, Shacky, you know, it was Benny Manning's dog was in the ruck. Which
Yeah, so Dunkley, English, McLean, Jong, Van der Meer, Williams, Ed Richards is getting some love from some other clubs seemingly
probably,
at the
probably
too.
Williams is the big one, Half, I think. He'll be missed in terms of what he was providing and building from a season from halfback. Extremely important to their run and drive, no question. Dunkley, of course, with what he does in the middle of the ground, and little one percenters, the smothers and the tackles that he's really built into his game this year, Tim English, from that forward point of view. So, look, I suppose by the time we get going, come back half of the year, hopefully Hugel Hagen's had a taste. Hopefully he's starting to find his way and really gets a good look in the second half of the year for the Dogs. I really think that he could add that flexibility. Shacky just came in and didn't offer what English had in the first 6 games of the year with a chance that that he had on the weekend.
Now, this Hugel Hagen thing, this is becoming an interesting part of the whole narrative of the Western Bulldogs season. Luke Beveridge gets asked about it every week. He was an emergency last week, so journalists are quite right or quite within their rights to ask about him again this week on the back of a loss. And Luke was a bit testy last week when talking about it post-game. What's going on with this number one draft pick, Jono? You know stuff. Tell us. Don't hold back from our listeners.
Half, I wish I did. Actually, I want to go and I'm going to make an effort in the next couple of weeks if he's still playing twos. I'm going to go watch him live. So then I get a true assessment of what he's doing work rate-wise and all those sort of aspects of things that that come into him then stepping up to being a regular performer at senior level. We did his game a couple of weeks ago with Fox, the VFL game. He kicked 5. But it wasn't a dominating 5, if that makes sense. It still kicked 5.
No, it was a lazy. Brilliant. It was lazy. Yeah.
It was. Well, it's probably not even. Kicking 5's a great effort, but it just didn't have that power to the performance that I think we would have sort of expect that if Hugo Hagen's kicked five, you've gone, well, he must have played unbelievable. Well, it wasn't an unbelievable performance to do that. So I think that's the growth in his game that I think Luke Beveridge is trying to get to. The fact that if he steps in, he needs to step in and have an impact from the outset. So, look, he's gone from not being an emergency. Bevo's played it well like that to an emergency. He's not far away. And he's just got to continue to perform to get in. It's okay. Take your time.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I'm surprised at the commentary around this because, yes, he's kicked a five and a four and a couple of other reasonable sort of games. But, you know, a few of those are Joe the Goose is over the top and Bulldogs winning by a big margin. But it also proves that the Bulldogs are a good team and they've got a good forward line at the moment. And so you don't just have to put him in because he was the number one draft pick. It's a luxury to be able to get him developing at the level below because the team, the senior team, is doing so well.
Well, one of the things...
I was just going to say quickly, Riley Tilthorpe in Adelaide wasn't playing great sample football, got a game at senior level and showed the footy world that this guy is ready to compete at the very top. Better ball movement coming to him, all those sort of things, which just allowed him to shine. I think Hugo Hagen would fall into that boat if he did jump into the Western Bulldogs forward line because the type of ball and the movement that would come towards him would be a lot more fluent again than what he is getting at the moment. So I think the step up for him won't be that difficult. It's just pushing the button at the right time to bring him in.
The other thing on Jamara Hugo Hagen is most number one draft picks, Jono, go to the bottom team. Or
yes,
close enough
that's
to the
a
bottom
really good
team.
Point.
And because they're the bottom team, they're not very good. And they need number one draft picks and talent to come in and play the game straight away. So we see them more prominently in the teams that finish at the bottom. This isn't the case with the Bulldogs. They got him through a little bit of a quirk in the system, through the academy structure, and they got access to the number one pick on the back of it. So they were already a good team. They didn't necessarily need the number one pick to come in and show everyone how good he is.
It's a great point. And the other part of that too also is that, and that doesn't go on the scoreboard. It's a great point, but it's not a great question.
Yes. No, I think, Whitey, you know what, Whitey? I think every listener's just given half a standing ovation.
Yeah.
That is going to be replayed for the entire weekend, the rest of the year. Seriously, that was the best comment of the year around at half. No one has said that yet. Well done.
Well, look, I have some moments. I have some moments.
But the other part of that, though, Jono, is that also a lot of, generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, the number one draft pick not only is what half's saying, but is often a midfielder, and they're ready to go quicker than what a key position player is as well. Now, Jamara could potentially play on a wing or a half-forward flank or whatever, but the taller players do generally take a bit longer to furnish, whereas... You know, Sam Walsh can go in and McGrath can kind of go in straight away and play a midfield role.
Yeah, and that's right. And you look at, I looked at some of his highlights from his under 18 year, his draft year, and it was phenomenal some of the things that Hugo Hagen was doing. His athleticism, marking the ball over packs, doing all those sort of things. Haven't seen that yet. Haven't seen it at VFL level. So there's a lot of things in his game that spark needs to sort of try and come back consistently, and I reckon Bevo will push the button as soon as he sees it.
So we saw yesterday, Jono, Melbourne announced a 7-year deal for Christian Petrarca. A couple of questions on the back of that for you. Do you like 7-year deals, especially at massive money? And if you're the Western Bulldogs, while we're on the Dogs, is that what you do with Marcus Bontempelli? Do you lock him away as a dog for life with this deal that's coming up at the end of the season?
Definitely lock him away. Don't let him go anywhere. I think that's. Do I like big deals? Half. If we're still playing and the club said it's a 7-year deal, 100%. You'd
where do I sign?
We'd be all over that. although I think the big Alistair Lynch signed a 10-year deal, didn't he, at Brisbane? And in the end, he was getting well and truly underpaid. So
he was. He got stitched.
That was a bit of an issue. But that's the only aspect of the 7-year deal. You can sort of see that it's a great deal and sets, you know, Christian up for life and basically keeps him at the D's for forever, which is great. Same with Toby Green at GWS. But I think 7 years is too long. One for the player, and two for the for that aspect of, you just don't know what 7 years in 7 years' time is going to be like, unless it's written into the contract that things are assessed based on where the competition's at. But it's not going to go down if the competition's not going as well in 7 years' time. So I think it's a risky move to do that for a young player. I would say 4 years would be the ideal sweet spot, because after 4 years, if you're flying still, you're going to get another four anyway on the on the back of that. So
I'm with you.
I think 4 years is about right in terms of where contracts should sort of sit for these gun players in the competition.
Is there any element of nervousness about the fact that Bontempelli hasn't committed yet, or are you 100% comfortable?
No, I'm 100% comfortable with the Bon. He's always been pretty calm and calculated with the decisions that he's made in his contract so far. That doesn't look like it's any different at the moment. I think he'll lock things away in the time that suits the Bon, and that's the way it should be. There's a when it comes to these guns in the competition, the absolute very best players, it takes time. There's a number of layers that go into the contracts. It's not just 7 years and there's your money. There's a lot of other things that come into play for these gun players. So it does take a bit of time, and that's just the nature of, I think, what's going on with the Bonts at the moment.
No fears for the Bont. He'll be a dog. He loves the dogs. We know that. He's coming in next week.
He is coming in next week.
He's coming in next week, so we'll really grill him on that.
Grill him. Really make him uncomfortable, John. Please. Don't make him uncomfortable. Keep him nice and calm. And he's a star captain and absolutely dominating. So he's a true red, white and blue.
Yeah, it was just interesting that the timing of it, that Petrarca and Toby Green would recommit on the same day. Brad Shepherd did in West Coast as well. So I kind of asked around yesterday as to why it is happening now. And it's sort of like, well, a little bit what you were saying, Jono, that these contract negotiations start at the start of the year in what is, you know, potentially their final year or whatever of a contract. It takes 3 or 4 months for it to sort of, you know, get to a point where they're comfortable. So Bontempelli hasn't, Zach Merritt hasn't, but the feeling I think now is that Zach Merritt is likely to stay. But there is a lot of interest around, and as everyone locks away, it puts pressure on the next lot because more clubs get interested because there's less players available.
We'll see what happens. We'll move on because we need to get to the news. Johnny Bowden's got the latest, and he's the voice of news in this country, as you well know. And after that, Tom Mitchell's going to join us, the inner sanctum of the Hawks. We've still got Jono sticking around because he's a legend of not only the Breakfast Club, but of Australian rules football, full stop. And he deserves to hang around till 8:30. So he's going to do that, and we'll take more of your calls through the morning as well. 1-300-652-927 on the Breakfast Club.
This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
You know, he trained really well the other day, and you know, sometimes a week off can really freshen, you know, players up both physically and mentally. So we think we'll get the very best version of Dusty this week, which is a good thing to have.
That is the word of Damien Hardwick talking about the great Dustin Martin, who's back in town this week as the Tigers get ready to tackle the Cats on Friday night at the MCG. It's one of the big games of the round, Jono. No doubt about that. It's got a bit riding on it. But is there another game that stands out in terms of outcome being quite fascinating? I mean, Melbourne and Sydney's a ripping game of footy. Adelaide, Port Adelaide's always good fun with a showdown. And then you've got another one that might be in the realm with North Melbourne and Collingwood, Jono. Which one are you most looking forward to in terms of the outcome?
I think the first two you mentioned in terms of Richmond and Geelong, the winner of this separates themselves from the other in terms of the ladder position at this current point, both sitting the same. The Cats have won 3 out of the last 5 and the Tigers have won a couple. So I think that's, you know, we all start off Friday night with a huge game of footy. Looking forward to that. I'm really enjoying what Sydney are doing at the moment. And they started the season well, but this is probably their biggest test for the year against the D's. Bud could be back in the lineup as well, which just puts a little bit more pressure on Melbourne, who weren't great for 2.5 quarters last week. So, you know, I think this is that's probably the game I'm looking forward to the most in terms of that. And everyone's keeping an eye on North Melbourne and Collingwood half. The result here, North Melbourne are playing better football. They are staying in the game for longer. Collingwood have just been, you know, terrible in recent times. So everyone's keeping a close eye on this one just for the story around where the Pies are at. Biggest club in Victoria, and they're battling, so everyone's watching them.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. We'll all be paying attention. Our Twitter poll at the moment, which game has the most riding on it this weekend? 25% say Richmond and Geelong, 14% say Melbourne, Sydney, 8% say Adelaide, Port Adelaide, 53%, Jono, saying North Melbourne and Collingwood.
Everyone loves the story.
Everyone's barracking for the story.
Two teams that are sitting last and second last could be the highest rating game of the year.
Well, it should be.
Which is about the story, not the teams that are representing on that particular day.
It should be even then, 17 by 18 if it's it's on the ladder. So we'll see what happens. Are you a fan of what the Giants are doing? I mean, they've really rebounded in the last 4 weeks. They've been very, very good on the back of a slow start. Interesting stat too. The Giants are 3-0 when Shane Mumford plays. And then they're zipping 4 when he doesn't play. Isn't that fascinating for a bloke who's 184 years old?
Because that Flynn was actually going okay, and I was surprised he didn't play last week. But it's almost like if Mumford feels he's ready to go, they play him, and that's it. That would be why.
Yeah, they've won 3 out of their last 5 as well. The Giants, they're building. Last week was really impressive. Lachie Whitfield back into that lineup was just superb. He had 30, dominated, and I think he's the one half that now they're happy to get him back for his run. Plays on the wing, pushes back, helps defence, and then bursts through. He had ridiculous numbers when it comes to metres gained and all those sort of things, which then assisted the forward half of the ground in particular. So he was the main one. Himself and Kelly on the wings dominated, absolutely destroyed the Crows in that aspect of the game.
Yeah, they were very good. I reckon you're right. Lachie Whitfield is one of the keys. Great to see Jesse Hogan in form as well. I'll get your tip for tomorrow night, Jono. We'll get your tips offline for the rest of the round. But Richmond and Geelong, who's going to win that match according to the great Brett Johnson?
I'm leaning towards the Cats. I'm loving Mitch Duncan back into the Cats lineup, and I'm going to stick with them in a 1-point victory half.
A 1-point victory. Okay. Brad Johnson says Geelong will win by 1 point tomorrow night at the MCG. Looking forward to that. If it's that close, it's going to be a great game of footy.
Yep. Sure will be.
Hey, before we go half, it was remiss of us not to mention the fact that Ash Barty defeated Petra Kvitova in 3 sets in the quarterfinals in Madrid. So she goes into the semis now to meet Badoza, who's about 62, 63 in the world. So
we don't worry about quarterfinals.
Perfect. Well, no, because Kvitova is almost her nemesis. So it's great news going into the French Open.
Coming off a tournament win last week or 2 weeks ago, the Madrid Open this week, she'll be fine for the French Open.
And have we got an update on Stuart McGill before we go?
Stuart McGill is still in a cupboard somewhere with Robert Allenby, is what we're led to believe. Jono, great to chat to you as always. Look forward to catching up with you next week. Have a great weekend.
No worries. See you guys.
Brad Johnson. You can catch him on the Saturday stretch on Fox Footy on Saturday night. And he's doing Brisbane Lions and Fremantle as well on Fox.
Also got the suspicion that Tom Mitchell wouldn't know anything about the Huttons footy book if he didn't know about the Batmobile. We'll have another fact tomorrow.
No, we better not. But we will have another show tomorrow and another ripping show from Warrnambool coming up on Racing Pulse and then RSN Central after that. Day 3, the final day of the May Carnival today. All the action on RSN 927. Have a great day, everyone. We'll catch you tomorrow morning from 6 a.m. Until then, Blue Eyes.